The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
I'm Jacqueline Johnson.
And I'm Marina Middleton.
And this is Work Party,
a podcast that's part work and part party.
Work Party celebrates a new generation of women who are redefining the meaning of work on their own terms and having fun while doing it.
In this podcast, we are diving into all the areas of being a working woman, mind, body, and business. No topic is off limit.
Real talk and hot takes. Think of us as your internet work wives. This is Work Party,
the podcast.
Wait, where's the champagne? Hey everyone, Marina and I are coming to you live from the Cherub pop-up space that we have here in Austin. If you aren't familiar, Cherub is a web app that connects entrepreneurs and angel investors, sort of using dating app mechanics. Think of it as Raya for deal flow. And we have a pop-up here in Austin with 40 plus brands looking for angel investors. And today we are live in the space doing an episode of Work Party. We have so many amazing women joining us here today to talk about the elephant in the room, which is the lack of funding that goes to women-owned businesses. Boo. Less than 2% of VC funding goes to women. Why? In my opinion, it's a boys club.
It's a boys club. And I mean, coincidentally, it's International Women's Day yesterday, 2 days ago, and Women's History Month. And, you know, you've been seeing so many brands shouting out women all of a sudden this month.
Which,
listen, I love a good shout out. But pay us.
Yes.
Right? So let's talk about the stats a little bit. Obviously, you shared the 2%. But what other stats are out there that are actually nauseating when you see them?
Well, it's actually less than 2%. It's 1.9%. And I think actually a new stat just came out from last year, which is even lower. It's even lower for women of color as well. But here are some stats. Women-owned businesses have grown 114% in the last 2 decades. Huge. Women are starting businesses more and more. Women entrepreneurs grew by 48%. We're outpacing our male counterparts by more than 20%, specifically in the US. And about half of all startups in the US are founded by women. Yet, we only receive 1.9% of venture capital funding. And when you think about how much money is in venture, trillions of dollars, 1.9% is nothing. It's literally pennies on the dollar. And the funding gap is even more pronounced for women of color. A study by Digital Undivided, our girl Lauren Malin, found that Black women-led startups receive 0.0006% of venture capital funding, and Latin women, 0.32%. I had to say zero three times.
Yeah,
that's unacceptable.
Insane. It's
unacceptable.
It's the financial gap is about $1.7 trillion that does not go to women. And as we were looking at, like, you know, what are the biggest reasons that are cited? One of them came up as, you know, and I talk a lot about this, is advocating for communication, but not equal support when it comes to the work at home and children. And, you know, sometimes VCs can look at women with children as, you know, maybe unstable or they're not fully committed or anything like that. And so less funding will go to them. Another citation said that unequal access to networking and information and funders, which is a big reason why Cherub exists. It's a big reason why Create and Cultivate exists, is to get women in the room talking, to talk about their business, to talk about, you know, the investors that are investing in them and sharing knowledge and the tools. And, you know, I was talking to someone earlier over the weekend of, it's a different language. And so it can be really, really intimidating. And I think one of the biggest reasons for us, especially on this episode, and especially with so many amazing women in person, is to really demystify raising money, demystify angel investment, and demystify this, like, you know, the scariness of just being a woman running a business and trying to raise money.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into it. So venture funding, like, why does someone raise venture funding? So you raise venture funding to accelerate your business, right? Grow faster, have more access to capital, be able to hire, be able to, you know, get office space, you know, all the things, right? But the reality of the situation is not every business is made for venture, because venture firms' expectations is that they want to 100x their investment. So they are loyal to their LPs. So LPs are limited partners. So basically, while they're investing in you, they have people investing in them. So there's LPs that are part of a fund. So they're investing, you know, it could be anywhere between $100,000, $250,000 that they're saying, hey, fund manager, we're believing in you and your strategy and your vision to find the best companies out there that are going to make us our money back. And the reality is what their strategy usually looks like is betting on one big win. So 90% of their investments were going to fail, and they need that one big win to set them apart. Look at Dollar Shave Club, things like that. Those will make or break a fund, right? An Uber, or whatever, being in that first round. And that's their model. So when you're building your business you love and you care about, and you're like, this is my baby, they're like, yeah, that's great. How are you 100xing my investment? Mm-hmm. So you just have to understand and know that when you're getting into the venture game, because it's a different mentality than an angel investor would have, for instance. An angel investor would go into a funding round because they believe in the founder. And look, they want to make their money back 100%, but they know this is a 5 to 10 year long game. And the reality is they're willing to walk from that money. That's what angel investing is. It's inherently risky, but it can pay off in big, big ways.
In the past 4 years, VC, the market has dropped by 35%. And I think that this, again, comes back to, this is a perfect time for angel investment. And so I have some questions.
Oh, yeah. Let's
for
go.
You specifically. So Jacqueline, can you tell them a little bit about your background in terms of like the venture fund that you've had and investing and all the portfolios that you have?
So I have such an interesting and unique, I think, perspective, because Create and Cultivate was completely self-funded that business. I put my own money into it, zero investors involved. So bootstrapped. My previous company before that, also bootstrapped. After I left Create and Cultivate a few years ago, and after selling it to private equity, I started a $20 million venture fund backed by a single family office that was focused on investing in women. It was my first foray into venture in a way. I'd been angel investing for over 15 years. So I've written my own checks out of my own little baby fund. So I'd been like vetting founders, looking for great businesses for a long time. But then being on the venture side was really interesting. Having LPs breathing down your throat, very interesting. And the reality is I bet on founders. Yes, I want the business to be great. Yes, I want the product to be amazing. But I'm not laser focused on your margins and especially in the early stages, right? Like I know you will will this into existence. LPs do not think like that. They are like, I need to see the margins. I need to see the numbers. What does the forecasting say? And it's a very different, it's the science part versus the art. I think angel investing is an art. I think venture investing is a science. Mm. So I've been on the venture side. I've been on the angel side. Now I have two angel-backed companies that we're running. Cherub has raised, and I think this is a testament to what you're saying, VC deal making has slowed down exponentially. Last year, it slowed down a ton, but the good news is angel investing overall increased. So angels are writing checks. VCs are not writing as many checks. Cherub has raised $1.1 million just from angels. Mm-hmm. No venture. And we're going to honestly probably raise two. And it's amazing because here's the deal. There are some amazing venture capitalists out there. Trust and believe. They're going to help your business. They're going to be a part of it. They're going to care because they want to, again, make their investment back. But angels will be your best friends when it comes to your business. Like I'm sitting here and Ellen Yin is sitting here as an investor in Cherub, and she is like our biggest advocate. She opens up so many doors for us in a way that, you know, a venture capitalist probably couldn't. Mm-hmm. So when you're thinking about, you know, bringing angels into your cap table or whatever it might be, it's really about the strategic alliance and what they can bring to the table. All this to say, like, absolutely, there are businesses that need venture. I always give the example of Rent the Runway, right? Mm. You cannot bootstrap that business. You're like, I got to mail stuff out. I got to get it back. I got to dry clean it. I need a warehouse. I need inventory. That's a hard business to bootstrap. And that's not just a couple hundred grand you need. You need millions of dollars to build that business. So there are venture backable ideas that you do need to go out for venture for.
And so is that how you qualify who should go out to be venture funded, or who, like, I'm going to go to an angel investor, I should go to a VC? Like, how do you qualify what business goes to what?
Yeah. So basically, here's the deal. 5 years ago, this was a completely different answer than it is today. So VCs 5 years ago, cash was so accessible. Cash was basically free. You know, the interest rates were super low. And so basically, and all of it, we all know the CPG boom was insane. And also these companies, for instance, DoorDash, Uber, all the companies we all love, were burning cash. They were not making any money, and yet they were the darlings of the startup world. And then what happened is the market correction. Mm-hmm. And essentially what that means is all those companies now are failing or freaking out because they don't have the access to capital that they needed and that they were frankly burning at the rate that they did. So everyone for the past few years has been scrambling to get as much cash as possible because no one wants to do a down round. Mm-hmm. So a down round, for anyone who's not familiar, is essentially when you go out to raise venture, you say, you know, I'm giving my company a valuation of $5 million because we have X amount of revenue and we're doing this. And then you have a few years that are bad, right? You don't make as many, you don't make as much revenue, you don't hit the goals you wanted to. And essentially your valuation is going to decrease because your numbers have decreased. And then you have to go out and raise money at a lower valuation. And they call that a down round. Mm-hmm. We've seen a ton of down rounds the past few years. And that's not great for the market, right? VCs are now not interested in companies that have a ton of users and are burning a ton of cash. They're like, what's your revenue? What's your profit margin? Are you profitable?
So when does someone, or when should someone start thinking about raising money? Before the revenue, or how are they going? What are the stages?
So yeah, this is a great question. So I think at the end of the day, there's different types of money. I would say, again, if you have a concept and an idea like a Rent the Runway or something that is capital intensive, right? You need money. And this is an idea that can be huge. Like it can be big. It can 100X with the right amount of money. But I was like, here's $100 million. Go build me a $1 billion business. And you're like, I can do that. Mm. That's a venture backable idea. The sad part and the annoying part is currently the pre-seed early stage environment sucks. No one is interested. Previously, pre-seed early stage was, I have an idea. I need money to make that happen. And so investors were like, great, I love this idea. Here's money to go make that happen. Now you go to a pre-seed early stage investor and they're like, you need to have $1 million in revenue. And you're like, I need $1 million to get to $1 million in revenue. Yeah. So it's really unfortunate for founders, because the reality of the situation is early stage venture, early stage startups is what drives innovation. Mm-hmm. It's what keeps our economy moving and keeps exciting new things entering the marketplace to, again, disrupt, create change, all these things. When those ideas don't get funded, innovation goes down. And so that's why we launched Cherub, is because angel investment is so different, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times these companies, to get to $1 million in revenue, just need a couple $100,000, which you shouldn't go to venture for. Mm-hmm. So that would be my thought on that.
So I was looking up a stat while you were talking about how many businesses, because I feel like especially in 2020, so many businesses started. Like, I mean, out of nowhere, it was like this person. And it 4.4 million businesses started in 2020. 2021 was 5.4, and it's just continuing to grow that number. You know, my question is, when you're starting the business and, you know, we've talked about VCs, all of that stuff, now you're going out to angels. What does that look like? I truly think that there is a knowledge gap in terms of, and I said it earlier, like it's a different language. I don't even know, you know, what some people are saying at times. I'm like, I'm sorry, can you repeat that? And shameless plug, Jacqueline has an unbelievable fundraising masterclass. I'm not joking. I've watched it 8 times, and it's a video, but the one of my favorite things is there's a glossary in there.
Yeah.
And it's all of the words that are used daily in these conversations. And there is nothing more empowering than just learning those words and being able to sit in new conversations and being like,
I'm so glad you said that. We're gonna do a pop quiz. You ready?
No. I was like, let me get
convertible note. Yeah, no, table.
I was like, I'm done.
Let's go.
She's like, no, right now, but truly. So like, I think there is that knowledge gap. And I know for Create and Cultivate, we're trying to provide way more resources and information. Totally. That's the whole reason of that platform. But so, okay, I've started my business. Cool. How do I go out to angels? What do I need? I mean, earlier we talked about the power of the art of pitching. And so let's talk about tapping into angel.
Absolutely. So there's actually 17 million companies seeking funding right now. And that's on every single level. So it's competitive. So when you're going out to angel investors, you need to bring your A game. And what I mean by that is a few different things. You cannot go out to an angel investor and have nothing prepared, because the reality is time kills all deals. Mm. So if I have an amazing conversation and I'm like, oh my God, I would love you to invest in my company. And they're like, I'm interested. Let's do it. And then you're like, let me get my pitch deck together. Let me get my legal paperwork together. Let me get my, I'm over it. I'm over it. A week has gone by. I'm over it. Like, I don't know. Time kills all deals. You have to move fast.
Yeah.
What was it? Make the hire, send the wire. Yeah. Our girl Sarah Chen Spelling, the best. So here's the reality of the situation. When you go to pitch angel investors, you have to know, one, obviously your elevator pitch. That's table stakes at this point. You also have to know, how are you differentiated in the market? Like, I'm starting this product that is absolutely amazing because blah, blah, blah. And here's what's going to happen. And I'll give Cherub as the perfect example. Cherub is changing the game. We are connecting angel investors and entrepreneurs. Over the last 3 months alone, over $1 million has been deployed to founders through Cherub intros on our platform, and we haven't even launched yet. We're in our alpha. Amazing. The next question I'm going to get, what about AngelList? It's the next question I get every single time I pitch Cherub. And I have to come prepared for that response. Like, I don't know. They're going to be like, well, whatever. AngelList is a massive company. You're going up against them. So what I typically say is AngelList is essentially a B2B platform. To get on AngelList, you have to have some set of knowledge around fundraising in general. They are not trying to speak to new angel investors. They are like, get in here. You already know what's going on. They typically require you to have exited a company or be a tech startup founder. Mm. The platform, furthermore, is built for technology companies because for so long, the people who were getting angel funding were tech companies. And AngelList has been around for a long time. They have not updated their platform to speak to the new consumer and the rising class of angel investors. Angel investors 5-10 years ago, white old dudes. Let's just be real. Angel investors today, me, you, a lot of you in this room. Mm-hmm. We look different. We think different. We need to be spoken to differently. Cherub is doing that. We're bridging the gap in a consumer way. So we are a consumer platform in the sense that we're looking at angel investing almost as a luxury purchase. If you're writing a $2,500 check to a company, you could be buying a bag. You could be buying a nice piece of jewelry, but instead you're investing in a startup. And really that's how angel investing is. And this is what I always say in this pitch. Think about crypto 5-7 years ago. Buying Bitcoin was fucking hard. Where do I go? I need a key. I need to like figure this out, blah, blah, blah. And then Coinbase launched. And you're like, oh, I get it. I just click this button and I buy Bitcoin. That's what Cherub is doing for angel investing. Mm. We're making it easy and we're converting new angels versus speaking to the existing angel class. And then they open their checkbook and they write me a check. I'm just kidding. No, I mean, I wish, but also yes. Yeah. No, but you need to have that dialed. But yeah. Then the next thing you have to have is, how much are you raising? What's your valuation? And that's when everyone's like, ugh.
And what you're doing with money.
What are you doing with money? So here's the thing. You have to go into it knowing yourself. Oh, it's a $10 million valuation, a 20% discount.
Can I'm raising on a safe. Can we talk about valuations?
Yes. Yeah. What do you want to talk about?
No. I think a knowledge gap is understanding the valuation and everything is so future focused and understanding what is your goal and how do you blend a true forecast and like your vision and your goals and your like aspirations, you know, like where is that sweet spot?
Yeah. Valuations are bullshit. Mm. They're totally made up. Like, I'm not even kidding. Forecast, bullshit. And here's the thing. Venture capitalists know this because when I was doing it, I was like, this is a joke, like looking at the, I mean, of course, it's like, I would love to forecast tripling every single year. Most founders do. That's what they put in there. They're not going to show you the realistic take. Mm-hmm. So when you think about valuations, like again, angel investing, arts and sciences, it is a little bit of that. If I, like for instance, with myself, I'm a 2-time exited founder. I've built and sold companies. That's valuable. That increases our valuation. I'm creating a company that has a patent, a trademark, whatever, that increases my valuation. I'm revenue positive, increases my valuation. Those are how you sort of need to think about valuations. There's numbers and then there's the magic. Mm. And you can't quantify that all the time. So that's what I would say. But here's the thing. Everyone's always like, you want the biggest valuation. No, you don't. You want a valuation that is a little out of reach. Always, but not completely out of reach because you will end up doing a down round and you do not want to do that. You want to exceed expectations. You want to grow and build and be like, yeah, $10 million valuation. Yep, we're at 50 now. You don't even want to be close to like, oh, we were 10, we're 12. It's like, no, you have to show that exponential growth and always be increasing the valuation. So if you come out the gates with like big valuation numbers and you don't hit your metrics, you're fucked at the end of the day.
Can we talk about different types of rounds? I know we talk a lot about a safe round, but what else is out there? What are some different options?
Totally. So it's interesting because venture used to be extremely structured. And I actually have heard a few people today and in the pop-up say different things about this. This is my personal opinion on it. Previously, when you're raising venture capital, you would do a round and you would basically go out for a certain period of time and you would close at a certain period of time. So you're like, I'm going to go out for $500,000. I'm going to close in 3 weeks. You go out to everyone. You have to create this FOMO that a lot of people have been talking about. And then you have to be like, are you in? Are you out? We're closing. We're going. We're doing whatever. That has changed in my opinion and perspective. I think that, yes, the FOMO is so real. It's so stupid. Like, honestly, it's dumb, but it does drive that piece of it. I would say, honestly, like, cash is hard to come by. So what we've heard now, and a lot of people, you'll hear this throughout the venture community, is rolling closes. And what that means is you keep your round open and you just, as people write checks, you cash them and you keep the raise moving. I personally think it's a better way to do business in this market, because when you start to put the pressure on people to wire on a certain day and do these things, sometimes they peace out. They're like, it's too much. Like, I can't do it. I didn't get the right. And so you're kind of screwing yourself in that way. So I personally think, especially for early stage, the more you grow and mature and you're doing your Series A and you have a board, you have to be a bit more meticulous about your raises. But the reality is most investors will exercise their pro rata. And what I mean by that is once you have a venture round, you basically have an investor who's like, I'm going to write you a million dollar check. They ask for a pro rata, meaning like when the company's doing well, they're like, I get to put another million in first before anyone else comes in. Mm. So if your company's doing well, hopefully all of your investors are going to exercise their pro rata rights and invest again more. Let's go. And so that way your raises become much easier. Mm-hmm. And so you're already going into the room being like, listen, all my guys that, you know, that exercise their pro rata, you can get in here, but it's small, money. You can get small. But yeah. And again, the FOMO, right? Yeah. Like, oh shit, I got to get in on this round. Mm. It's so much harder when you're early stage. You got to get like the big fish. You got to get it going. And the reality is once Cherub got a few checks through the door, it was so much easier to raise because no one wants to be the first check. Everyone's like, was you right? Were you doing it? Who's doing it? Whatever. Yeah. Have your mom write the check. Yeah. Pay her back.
Joanne.
We got 500K in the door. Joanne, great. I'm going to write it back to you. Yeah. No, but I'm just kidding. You can't do that. I think that's illegal. Don't do that. This is not financial advice. But I'm just saying that's the reality is like nobody wants to be check number one, but someone has to do it. Our first check into Cherub was Rajul Kadakia. Mm-hmm. Amazing. And she's an incredible supporter. And like that check changed our business. So rounds amorphous, but the reality is there's pre-seed, there's early seed, there's friends and family. There's so many early, everyone's trying to like make more early stage rounds because it's like, we don't know. But you really have to, when you're in Series A mode, you have a board, you're definitely revenue positive. You're in a different ball game than I would say seed early stage.
There was a panel that I was listening to yesterday. I'm like blacking out on which panel it was, but perfect. That's fine. I'm like, where am I? But they were talking a lot about don't feel like the money is going to solve your problem that you're going through. You should have the solution to that problem. And so a lot of the founders will wait until they raise money. They'll wait until, and then they're like, but once I have this amount of money, I'll be able to do this, or I'll be able to then get to that point. And like, sure, it's going to amplify anything that you're doing, but it shouldn't be the only way you're going to be able to get there. And I think a lot of the founders, obviously, that we're meeting and that are coming to Cherub, of course, are like so scrappy, so resilient. And so just have a plan and really understand like what you're going to do with or without the money, and just always have that solution. Because I think that also gets your angels specifically, and I can only speak from the angel side of like, I feel comfortable investing in this because I know that you can do X, Y, and Z. One of the things that we've also been talking a lot about, and I think it's like very, I don't know if trendy is the word, but SPVs. Can you tell us what SPVs are?
Yeah. So
am I the only one drinking champagne? Like, what's happening?
Oh my God. No, I feel like I'm talking so much. I'm like, No, but SPV is a special purpose vehicle. And what that means is you want a clean cap table. And what I mean by that is you don't want a ton of people on your cap table, meaning you don't want 4,000 investors, because that's a nightmare, a legal nightmare, a communications nightmare. And also, if you ever do want to sell, it's very challenging further down the line to do that. So what an SPV does, it creates its own entity, and then all the angel investors invest in that specific entity, and then that entity writes a one large check to your company. So there's one company on the cap table with all these little angels involved in it. What it also does is it opens up for unaccredited angel investors. So accredited angel investors, and I might mess up these numbers, but it's something around this. It's essentially like guardrails that the government puts into place to essentially let you know this is risky. And they're saying like, you should only angel invest really if you're making, I think it's $350,000 or no, $250,000 individually, $350,000 as a married couple, or you have like a net worth of like 3 to 5 million. So you have like real estate holdings, things like that. And so you can write checks as an unaccredited investor. You just have to know the risks involved. But you want, as a company, accredited investors on your cap table. So that solves that problem, and people can put in those small checks. But also, one thing I didn't finish my thought on was all the things you need when you're going out to pitch. Mm-hmm. You need a data room. You need a deck. You need all these different things. So just quick plug for Cherub. But Cherub is a one-stop shop for deals, diligence, and deal flow. So basically, you go on and you can create what we're calling sort of like the Squarespace plug-and-play data rooms, because most data rooms are just links. Like you go on and it's just like a bunch of links to different things, but it gives you analytics. Like
What would normally live in a data room?
So basically what would live in a data room, it depends on where your company's at, but like your P&L, your trademarks, your formation docs, your deck, screen grabs, if you, you know, have a prototype or, you know, any sales metrics data, all those different things. But it's pretty ugly, if I'm being honest. It doesn't tell a great story. And so we are creating essentially the Squarespace of data rooms, beautifully created, investor tested, putting the best foot forward for the founders on Cherub. So you can have an always on data room. Then from there, you can see analytics, which is important because you want to know who's opened my deck, who's seen my pitch information, where are they dropping off? So you can even see how long did they spend in my deck? 3 seconds? Cool. They're not interested. 6 minutes? All right. Let's have a conversation. So I think that's really interesting. And Cherub does provide that. So that's part of it. The other part of it is being surfaced to angels in the matching mechanism. So again, like I said, when someone's interested, you need to be like, amazing. Whoosh, here's all the information you need. And then you follow up. And once they say I'm in, you better get that paperwork, that safe, that, you know, convertible note, whatever to them ASAP. Get it signed and then the wire. Wire, wire, wire.
I love that.
Send
so
me
much.
The wire.
I love it so much. I mean, I feel like I've asked all of the questions possible. Is there anything that you wish for founders to know when they are maybe not even starting their business, but maybe they're considering bringing on some angels? What are some things that they should consider? What are some things they should watch out for?
Yeah.
And then we can open up for Q&A too.
Yeah, yeah, let's do it. Here's the thing. Angel investors, you need to ask, listen, not all money is the same. You have to be really careful with who you bring onto your cap table. Mm-hmm. Angel investors, typically very minority shares, will not have any rights in regards to your business. Obviously, if they come in, they're like, I have a lot of ideas. And like, I think we could do this together. And like, I really have this idea to do that. I don't know. Like, yeah. I got my shit figured out. Like, I'm good. Yeah. It's like, you suss that out.
Yeah.
But if they're like, I have complementary skill set to your business, I can bring a lot to the table. Like, that's exciting. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, if you want someone, like, if you don't want someone blowing up your phone every day, like, you got to ask their communication style, their investment style. How do they sort of like to show up in these investments? The other thing I'll say is, like, venture, you have to ask a lot of questions. I know it's like, especially as women, you get in the door and someone's like, I'm going to write you a $3 million check. And you know how hard it is. You know the stats. You know all these things. You're just like, oh, just give me the money. Like, mm-hmm. Finally. You get someone on your cap table that is not on your team.
Yeah.
It is very, very difficult to run your business because these people are all up in your business, especially if they have a board seat. And the biggest thing, and we talked about this on actually a panel at FounderMade, was equity versus control. My philosophy on equity versus control, I'm not precious about equity. I think there's a lot of people who are very precious about equity. I don't want to give up. I don't want to give up. You need to care more about control, in my experience, the controls of your company. Who has the decision-making power? Who can hire? Who can fire? Who makes creative decisions? Who makes the business decisions? If I have the control of my company, that is the most valuable thing to me. And I always say, like, you have zero, like owning 100% of a company worth $0 is $0.
Yeah.
Owning 10% of a company worth $1 billion, very different numbers. Mm. So for me, I think you have to be smart about equity because obviously you want to get paid in the end, but I wouldn't be precious about it. Mm. And I would care more about the controls and the provisions because any VC coming in is going to give you the most one-sided contract.
Yeah.
And you need an amazing lawyer that's going to come in and be like, nope, 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 nope. And that's how deals fall apart, right? Like, because they might be like, look, we want at least this or at least that. Yeah. And then you have to walk away from it. So it's just important to know all those different things.
Yeah. I think also as we're, you know, raising money and going out there, I think a lot of the pressure is for us to make the decks and us to always have the answers. But don't forget to also ask questions and say, how are you going to provide, you know, support? What does your network look like? Or who do I maybe not have access to? Or maybe what resources do I not have access to that you can, you know, support me in? I think that's the one thing.
One thing I love to do is just go up to all the male VCs and be like, what's your check size? And then we say, check size matters.
Yeah. She did this in person. I literally did that at a networking event.
And he's like, I think you'll like my check size.
And
I was like, bleh.
Exactly how cringy that was. That is exactly how it was in person, I promise.
That is a normal question to ask. Hey, what is your typical check size? How are you investing? Right. What types of controls do you have? Like,
totally.
It's dating. You're getting married.
100%. No, totally. I'm exhausted. No, but really, I think on top of that too, outside of just, you know, what's your network or how can you support me? I think it's really, really important to just like, and Jacqueline, you said it, but like, don't just hone in on the money. Are they, you know, advocates of your business? Are they going to talk about your business when you're not in the room? That is what matters, right? And I think that, again, a lot of, especially, you said this on when I had interviewed you on my past podcast, of you were talking about when you were raising money to just make sure that not only are they advocates, but they're also like, when you're not in the room, you're talking about it. I'm trying to think of what you said. It was, oh my God, this is going to come. I'll say it to you guys when we're out and about.
Well, but one thing I was also going to say that you need to bring to a pitch is your exit strategy. So that's something that, like, I've literally been so interested in angel investing company that I'm like, I was like, so what's the exit strategy? And they're like, I just want to do this forever. I love this so much. I'm so excited. I was like, goodbye. Yeah.
No, you said the worst time to raise money is when you need money.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, have a plan and have a solution, like I said earlier, but do not wait until you're like dying for money, because then again, you're desperate and you're not able to say, well, what value can you provide to me? And so just don't panic when, again, you're in that sticky mud and sticky mud.
No, it's so true. And also the other thing I would say is, I think there's different pitches. Like, again, the exit matters to both the angels and the venture capitalists. But angels, you're not necessarily pulling at heartstrings, but you are. There needs to be an emotional connection and attachment to you or your product with an angel for them to invest, in my experience.
100%.
Do not bring that same energy to a VC pitch.
Yeah.
VC pitch, you're like, boom, boom. You hit your stats. You have your numbers. And then you're literally like, I don't need you. You need to go in, like, you have to play so hard to get with the VCs. Like, they do not. Yeah. Like, what?
BDE.
Yeah.
I didn't know if we could say it on the podcast.
Big dick energy. No, you have to go in. So it is literally dating. You're like number 7 on the roster.
Yeah.
Call me up maybe.
Yeah. But I do. I think that that also creates the FOMO, and it shows so that dumb. You are very confident and that you can do it, you know, without them. And that's the goal. Yeah. So I want to open up to questions. If you guys have any questions around the conversation. Yes.
So the question is, what are specific traits that would like a unicorn exit have in common? Mm. Let's think about unicorns in general, right? Like, so you have Airbnb, you have Uber, you have ideas and businesses that change the world in a way, fundamentally. The good news, bad news on that. Those ideas can fall flat so easily because they're big problems to solve. To like wake up and be like, you know what? Every house can be a hotel. Like, let's go. You're like, what?
Tell them, like, about your first investment.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So I have invested in one unicorn, which was Away Luggage, right? And that one's a little different, right? Because it's not groundbreaking in the sense of like an Airbnb, but you look at it and you're like, this is a stale ass industry that is like literally not been disrupted. And again, this is like the Casper for mattress, the whatever for this. Now this idea is a little played out, right? And I don't think it's much, much harder to be a CPG brand and be a unicorn these days, I would say. But it's not impossible. But I would say when I'm looking at now for unicorns and things like that, typically it's going to be solving massive problems in the world, huge, huge ambitions, and likely technology-based, I would say. Because the valuations for the CPG brands are just plummeting at the end of the day. And like, look at a lot of the, like, and here's the thing, not everything has to be a unicorn. You can have an amazing investment that exits for $50 million, $100 million as an angel investor specifically, and you'll make good money back. So I'm now not necessarily looking for unicorns. I mean, I am. Where are you? But I'm more like, okay, I can actually see an exit plan for this because there's been so much consolidation. So what I look at is like, who is buying up companies? And right now I would say Food and Bev is going to have a massive consolidation. So you have the, you know, Nabisco's and these massive coming Nestle's. They're snatching up these innovative companies when they are getting, you know, rapid market share, a lot of buzz, a lot of excitement. Alcohol, like Diageo, Amass, Constellation, they're constantly circling these companies to buy them. They're not creating their own brands anymore. They're like, no, it's cheaper and easier for them to buy them at the end of the day. Beauty, I think, is a little bit of a bubble. Like, I think they've done a lot of consolidation, and I think it'll still happen. It's just, it's so saturated. So it's really hard to break through. And the companies that we are seeing sell, 10 years, they're 10 years in. So I think that's just also something to keep in mind.
Yeah. So I'm very green. Don't know anything. I've learned a ton these past few days. So thank you very much. But you mentioned that, and I might be butchering this, but you said equity doesn't necessarily mean control. Mm. I've always thought that it did. Mm. So can you talk a little
bit
about how?
Yeah, so you can own like not the majority of the company and still have control of the company. It comes down to the legal paperwork. So the reality is like, again, you can own, you know, again, you might have a spread of different investors that own 70% of the company, not one owning 70%, but collectively they own 70%, right? But no one is the majority above that 30. So no one owns more than 30% of the company, but I own that smaller stake. Does that make sense? So basically equity doesn't always necessarily mean control, but it comes down to the control provisions. And those are going to be agreed upon in whatever, you know, safe document or stock document that you're doing. Like those will be dictated with each investor. Sometimes investors will ask for what we call a side letter. And what that means is like, they're like, I want something different than whatever everyone else is getting. And you don't often do those, but sometimes you will, like where it could be like, okay, like you get a waterfall first, meaning they're going to get paid first or whatever it is, if there's a thing. So you can do things outside of that doc. You don't want to have a bunch of side letters though, but you only do that if you know, it's something that's a deal breaker essentially.
Yeah. Always get a very, very, very good lawyer.
Yeah.
Always.
Lawyers. Like,
there's
best
just so many. I think the hard part about all this is that there is a billion different ways to do it. And that's what makes it obviously challenging. But so a lawyer will tell you all the different ways that works for everybody.
I think you just answered my question. I was going to ask, at what point should someone start looking at angel investing? Like, I want to start a product line. I have my own business. And I'm like, I could self-fund it till the cows come home, probably, you know, for as much as I need. But should I bring one in? When should I bring it in? At a certain revenue mark?
I would say, so the question is, I'm seeking angel investment, but I'm just starting out essentially. So when do I start? I can self-fund it up until a certain point. I would say self-fund until you can no longer self-fund, because what you're going to do is create traction. You're going to move it along quicker. And the reality is like, not a lot of people are investing in ideas right now. It sucks. It's just again, that innovation market isn't there. So I would say, again, you don't even have to have revenue, but you have to have the product in hand, the website built, whatever, you know, you're building to at least showcase this idea versus just doing a deck to kind of propose an idea.
That's a great question.
Yes. So the question is, what about the exit strategy? How do you talk about that? Typically, there's a slide in a deck that will have an overview of just like the market. So for instance, if I have a beauty company, I would have in there, here are these recent big exits. You know, Way was acquired by P&G and Tasha or whatever. Like all these companies were acquired. Like, hey, look at this. This people are buying in this market. So that kind of tells a story. But if what I would say is my goal to exit is X. And typically someone will say, I want to get to 50 million in revenue and then I'm going to go out and shop my business or whatever it is. So you do need to have an exit strategy. The main thing is you just have to have one. You just want to have to exit your business when you're talking to investors. You just don't want to say, I'm going to hand it down to my sweet daughter. They're like, what? What am I doing here? That's philanthropy. That's different.
Yeah.
That's different.
Like,
yes.
I have a question. I'm very I just want to know how the one early stage founder go about actually finding angel investors. Or like, for example, for an electric health wellness, where would I go with the process?
Yeah, so this is what Cherub was built for, because the question is, where do I find angel investors? And it's a question I was getting asked over and over and over again on all my coaching sessions. And also it was like similar things where it's like, I'm green, I don't know the language. Like, how do I do this? So I kept having these coaching sessions where I'd go through and give all this information. And then I was like, I'm just gonna start the fundraising masterclass and like create it and give that information out. And then I realized the other question I get is, where are all the angel investors? And so my co-founder Angelina and I kind of had this interesting conversation. We realized, less than 3% of accredited angel investors invest. And we don't believe that's because they're not interested. We just don't think they're getting deal flow. And so the reality is deal flow comes from your network. And so the majority of people that are at venture firms or angel investing are white guys that went to Stanford, worked at Bain, worked at McKinsey, whatever. And then they're bros that also worked at whatever. And are, you know, so it's like, oh, of course, all of their deal flow is going to look like them. It's going to be people that are similar to them. So people in Alabama or Kentucky who are building these great businesses are not going to get in front of these types of people. And so the reality is Cherub was built because it opens up and kind of democratizes angel investing in general. You can go on there. You have to put your best foot forward, put your pitch deck, all these things, tell your story and say what you're, you know, raising. And we will match you to angels that fit your own criteria. So you can say, I really just want female investors. I really just want exited founders. I really just want advisors, whatever. And then you get matched in that way. So we're creating a pool of angel investors. So we have over 1,000 on the platform itself. And so you can get in front of them. And again, the rest is up to you, but we're trying to get them a platform. And angels are excited. That's the other news. They're excited. Of the $1 million deployed through Cherub, 40% were first-time angels, meaning these are accredited investors writing checks for the first time and are excited because they're like, I'm finally getting access to cool companies I otherwise wouldn't have. So we're really excited about this flywheel effect where angels that are more well-known, so myself, Ali Webb, Candace Nelson, Morgan DeBond, people who are probably getting inundated are posting about Cherub, and then we're securing what we're calling our quiet angels. Maybe lesser known, but writing really powerful and meaningful checks. And we've seen this flywheel work really well. So check out Cherub.
How do you become an angel investor?
You write a check. This is my favorite topic. No,
any founder. No, right. But
no, this is the question is, how do I become an angel investor? You literally write a check. It's so funny. And I would say if you're an unaccredited angel investor, join an SPV. There's really great ones. Dream Ventures has one, Pearl Influential. Like there's so many you can join. But the reality is like for some of these SPVs, you can write $2,500 checks, $5,000 checks. Change your bio on Instagram. I'm an angel investor.
Yeah.
Change your website. I'm an angel investor. Check out my portfolio.
Yeah.
Like that's how you do it. And that's how you get in the game. You just start writing checks. And like, again, every year it'd be like, I'm going to spend, you know, maybe it's 10K. I'm going to invest 10K this year. And that could be 10K in one company. That could be 10K in five different companies. It can look different. But I think it's important to start playing the game, right? Getting in the room and having those conversations. Because a lot of angel investing for me personally has been about networking.
Yeah.
I wanted to write checks to girls that I was like, I need to get in the room with these girls. And like, I want them to also want to do stuff for Creating Cultivate. So I will write a check to your business because I know this is going to open up doors for me in different ways. And it has.
Yeah.
So think of it as an investment, not only in an amazing company, but in yourself, in your network as
well. Exactly. We were talking about that yesterday in the panel of like, it opens doors both ways, right? Opens doors for the founder because then they can do more when they have those funds, but it opens doors for you because again, you can go to these events, you can go to these rooms. And I feel like that was not something that I ever thought about when we were talking about it yesterday on the panel. What are you laughing at?
I'm laughing because I'm like, I'm kind of hungover and I am killing this podcast. I'm like, do I need to do every podcast hungover?
Literally like what?
And I'm South
like,
by.
Oh
I can't.
God, I'm dead. I do not co-sign this.
I'm literally laughing so hard.
Yes.
As an angel investor, how important is it to be able to write checks to multiple companies? It's just having like that one, long-term
yes.
And that, like high value investment.
Amazing. This is a potential investor in Cherub. See, I have to pitch her after. This is very exciting. No. The question is should you be writing checks to one company, multiple companies, et cetera? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think look at angel investing as an asset class, risk management. In the same way you don't want to be like, I'm gonna put all my money into the stock market.
Yeah.
You don't want to put all your money into one company and like betting on like that horse. When you're building wealth, you want real estate, you want company, you want equity, you want stocks, you want angel investments, you want crypto, you want a mix of everything and kind of spread it out evenly. At least that's my philosophy when it comes to angel investing. Like I write a pretty small check size, like 5 to 10K typically in a lot of different companies, right? And then again, you can have pro rata if you want. You can say like, if you come back, I'll write a bigger check. I'll be more involved. But at least for me, I like to diversify in that way. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty over indexed on beauty, to be honest. Like I'm in Chill House, Ceremonia, Crown Affair, Live Tinted, just a ton of beauty. And so for me, I'm now focused more on like tech products. I'm also in a lot of food and bev, but mm-hmm. it's because I love the products. And again, there's synergies there. But I think, like, again, diversifying out the categories, the types of companies, and that's what I would say.
And I also think a lot about, obviously, the things that you really love and the products that you use, the things that you love, the things that you do. And then look in your network of the entrepreneurs and the founders that you support and that you're friends with, or maybe that you've met into a room and they tell you about their business. And if it's something that's in alignment, like, that's an opportunity to learn a little bit more about their goals and where they are. Are they raising money? And how can you support them? Because that can sometimes, again, because there's that knowledge gap, that might not be something that they're comfortable, you know, saying or anything like that, and vice versa, you might not be comfortable sharing it. So I feel like just opening up that dialogue within the network that you're meeting already.
Yeah.
So this is all super new to me as well. Is the masterclass that you spoke to something where it's like a high overview?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell her.
Yeah, feel free.
You know, I've done real estate and stock market, but I'm like, oh, I could be the angel investor from what you're sharing. But I don't understand the timeline because it's all within language. It sounds like a glossary. I love that.
Yeah.
But it's like, so, okay, I invest because the pitch deck talks about an exit strategy. Is that when I can expect a return on my investment? But it's also not secured, and I get that. So, like, what does that look like when I'm like, oh, I have money to invest somewhere. Now I see that angel investing option, not just the stock market or something boring, like, but how can I, like, learn more about that? Is that the masterclass, or, like, what do you recommend?
I think everyone should take the masterclass, whether you're raising money or an angel, to be honest. You need to be able to speak the language. Yeah. Like, I genuinely, like, so basically it's like, it's 12 videos and each one goes into a different stage of fundraising. So it'll start with basically like, here's a language you need to know. Here's a type of investment you can take. Here's the different rounds. Here's what needs to be in your data room. Here's what needs to be in your pitch deck. There's flow charts that, like, lead to everything. And also even like, here's emails you should send to investors. Here's this is the why.
What if I'm looking to
invest? No, totally. You need to...
What I should look for.
Yes.
But you need to know the language beforehand.
But also, I would say, like, you need to also come up with your own philosophy on angel investing in that way, too. So when you're going into it, you need to be like... Again, most angel investing 5 to 10 years if there's going to be an exit. And so when you're looking at their data and stuff like that, you want to be able to say, like, okay, this is interesting to me. I do see, like, this being a bigger product and how I can support and help. And I'm going to write this check. And again, you also have to understand valuations, right? And, like, what your check size is going to get you and all those different things. So that's all part of understanding both sides of the coin. Mm-hmm. So even, I always say this, even if you're never going to fundraise, even if you're only interested in angel investing or in this ecosystem, you should take the fundraising masterclass or any masterclass, whatever. Do your research, understand it, because the language will start to become second nature to you. Like, I speak about it now, and I think you've, you know, again, in the last, like, you know, 6 months, like, you've picked up on it now, and you, like, are like, oh yeah, of course, like, that makes sense. The discount, the safe note, whatever. It's just, it is this weird language, but once you know it, you'll understand it inside and out. So when a founder's pitching you and talking about all these things, you'll understand both sides.
Totally. And I think a lot of, too, when we talk about having these conversations, but why it's so important to have the conversation, the reason why, and this was, again, happening on a panel, but a lot of these conversations usually happened on the golf course, right? Where most women weren't. And so now we have events like this. We have, you know, Create and Cultivate, where we're talking about fundraising and you're meeting investors and all of that stuff. But why I was laughing and why I wanted to talk about the fundraising masterclass is because when Jacqueline launched it, I was like, oh my God, girl, you did not do this masterclass justice, because it was so amazing in the content that was inside of it. Not because of all the content, but it was how it was broken out. So you would go in there, you're like, okay, this is where you're beginning. And so when you're watching it as an angel investor, you're like, oh, okay, so I understand that the business has to be in this stage for me to then think about investing. And then these are the different ways that I can, you know, raise money. And so again, you're now flipping the lens and from a perspective of like, okay, well, these are the different ways then I can invest, you know? And so you kind of have both point of views, and it's, again, you have the resources, you have the decks, and I make no money off of this, by the way. I just want to emphasize
I love that.
I don't know why I'm selling
Listen,
it so
join
hard
the
for
affiliate
her, but,
program,
but really, yeah, I'm like, yeah, give me a code, bitch.
I'm just kidding.
you had a question.
Yeah, you guys have been amazing. I love
the
information the last few days. It's been great. Thank you. The question is, what percentage do you offer an angel investor?
It's based on your valuation. So essentially, when you're writing a check of, you know, I don't know. So let's just say it's I'm going to make this up. It's $5 million in valuation. You're writing a $2.5 million check. You're getting 50% of that company. So you need to like be able to do the math on the back end. I mean, that's like a random scenario, but I like it, there's calculators online. I use a lot of startup calculators to be able to dictate like how much equity I'm actually getting, but it's all based on the valuation. So as your valuation increases, your dollar is going to get you far less equity, if that makes sense. And then also you'll get diluted as the valuation goes up. But again, like my little Peasley like portion of Away Luggage that I invested in 2013 was worth so much money.
How much, Tone?
It was seven figures. I exited for seven figures, which is insane. I wrote a $10,000 check.
And that was your first investment?
My first angel investment ever.
Wow. That's insane.
It's all downhill from here. No, yeah.
And I can airdrop you guys a calculator. It's really amazing because, again, you can work backwards
you can say,
I'm going to put $5,000. Oh, I'll get this much. Oh, maybe if I put $7,000, I can go this. So you can just play around with the numbers. Yeah. And again, it's like where you are in your finance. And yeah, I mean, then. No, nothing is a dumb question. Don't say that.
You said valuation is bullshit.
Yeah. No, valuation matters in terms of when you're exiting, of course.
No, totally.
Oh, yeah.
But in like, let's just say in the beginning stages of your business, how am I supposed to put a valuation to my company when I don't know? You know what I mean? So like if somebody's going to invest and they're going to invest $10,000, let's say, how do I know that? And I get
that
it relates to the valuation, but you said it's BS. So like, can I?
I would say it's typically based on revenue and profitability once you get to a certain stage and the magic piece. Yes. If you're early stage, I would say it's always going to be like sub $5 million, I would say, for the most part, if you're early, early, early days. If you have that magic we're talking about, it's usually $10 million or below when you're first starting out. But it really is random. Like, it's hard to say. But, like, again, if you're like, I'm a perfume company and Neiman Marcus just ordered 3,000 units, your valuation goes up, right? So, it's tough. It matters when you exit, of course. But
I think it's like less of, oh, it's just bullshit, but it's more of like it's forecasted on a bunch of different factors. And so those factors are always changing.
Yeah.
And so thinking about when you're starting to raise, what are all the factors, putting all of those factors together, and then that is where that number comes. And again, that's going to change throughout, but it's just, it's a guess. It's an assumption based off of the data that you do have.
Mm. Okay, I think we have time for maybe like one more.
Yeah, Haley.
Okay, I guess I'm really used to a different type of investing strategy. Like, I come in, I write a bigger check than that. When you said that, wow, that seems like such a light lift.
What, the 5 to 10? Or what? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I was like, oh, wow, okay. But I guess the strategy connected to it is the missing piece for me because I'm used to going in and then I send the business revenue. Or, like, I'll come in and I'm like, okay, I'm going to connect you to the COO. Or, like, I want to say it's control because I don't control like the ops, but I do kind of control the revenue because I send it. I think it's just like a cozy comfort zone for me. It's like, okay, cool. But then for this, is it more of a, okay, let's hope that this does well? And
for my personal investment strategy is what you're saying. Yeah, like I think, again, I don't have time, if I'm being honest, to help other companies build their brands or whatever. Yeah. I'm not the most, I'm a valuable angel in the sense that like, I have a profile, I can promote it, I can plug it into things, I can do those things for them. I typically, if I'm doing those things, I'll invest and I'll get advisor equity. So I do both on that end. So I'm always trying to promote my companies. Like, I love it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm invested in some of the companies downstairs. Like, I want to promote them in anything that I can do. But if I'm doing actual work on top of it, I'll usually get advisory shares. And that's honestly just because my time is valued differently. But I think founders must love you. If you're like, hey, I'm sending you revenue, I'd be like, woo, let's go. Like, that's amazing. But also it's smart for you, right? Because you're putting in larger chunks of money and you want them to be successful. So it really depends on the investment strategy. Like for me, I'm pretty passive in the sense that like, I'm not like ongoing helping. I join one advisory board a year, typically, if I'm going to do it. And I take a big chunk. I take 2% typically, which is high for an advisor. But it's only because I'm tired. I'm so tired. No, but I'm literally like, I bring a lot of value to the table and I'm going to put a lot of effort into it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm an advisor to TSI, this is their offices. They're an amazing agency. And, you know, again, been with them for, I don't know, now it's like 6 years, whatever. Yeah. But like, again, I, of course you, I always want to be helping these companies. And if I get an email, because you'll get, as an angel, you'll get quarterly updates from your brands. And there's always a, here's what I need help with. And if there's anything I can do, I'm obviously going to do it. But it's a different investment strategy for you. And obviously it's like bigger risk, bigger return for you in that way. So for me, it's definitely a little fingers crossed on like a lot of these. But I feel like I'm such a sucker for the founder.
Yeah.
And because I've been there. And I know Create and Cultivate and Cherub would not be, if I was like, yeah, whatever, this is cool, I would not invest in that person. I need someone who's like, this is my blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll do whatever it takes. I will move mountains. Like, that's what you want to invest
in. I also think it depends on the founder and what they want out of the investor too. I think that there is founders that, again, want the money and want to give you updates and want to tap you in when they need help. And there's other founders that are like, okay, I'm ready for you to also tell me where you want this money to be or how you want this money to be deployed. So yeah. I think it's also going to be like a conversation that you have. This was so amazing. One of the things I did want to say, especially as a lot of new founders or women that are fundraising, a very dear friend of mine said to me one time that horses race with blinders so they can just focus on the end goal. And I don't want you guys to ever get discouraged, you know, when you are looking at all of these different businesses that are unicorns or that are raising this much or have this valuation. Yeah. I think it's really important to just focus on what is your goal? What are you going to do with that money? What is your intention around it? Who are you surrounding yourself with and how are they impacting both your personal and like your mental health as a founder, but also amplifying your business professionally. But this was amazing. I love that.
That's it for this episode of Work Party. We hope you had fun.
Be sure to submit your listener questions via DM and we will get to them weekly.
Follow and subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a review if you have a minute. And don't forget, work hard.
Party on.
Yay.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Work Party. If you like what you heard, follow, leave a review, rate the pod, or slide into our DMs.
Check out the different ways you can create and cultivate on our website, createcultivate.com. From retreats and masterminds to our summits and festival.
We have different experiences to support you through your entrepreneurial journey from launch
to legacy.
Follow us at Create Cultivate on all platforms. And don't forget, work hard.
Party on.